Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver, still in New Orleans, waiting for the boogie era to begin. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. Actually, a ton. The DeMarcus Cousins trade, basically during the All-Star game and the fallout immediately after the All-Star game, is one of the weirdest things I have ever seen covering the NBA. It was surreal, but at the same time, because the Kings were involved, you didn't like want to pinch yourself. You were just like, oh my God, I can't believe these guys are doing this right now.
Yeah, so look, I mean, the trade like broke my brain for about 90 minutes last night, just sitting, because I left early. I left New Orleans early, and I was sitting in my living room and just couldn't figure out, I don't understand how that is the real deal that they came up with after the last like 36 months of boogie rumors. But you were in the locker room, so I need you to take me through like the actual scene there.
Well, every year, one of my favorite games to play is who's the last one to get into the All-Star game, and then how many minutes do they get to play. It's just one of like my sadistic little pleasures in terms of, you know, looking at ranking players. How do the coaches treat these guys? And sometimes those guys get angry about it.
Yeah.
So it jumped off the box score when he's only playing 2 minutes during the game, right? And some of the tweets started picking up to that effect as the rumors were kind of gaining momentum during the game. So it became very clear, because no one played defense once again. Anthony Davis basically set an All-Star game record for points, but it was like completely boring and not really interesting, that the story was going to be Cousins, right? So they set up this mixed zone media interview room, which was basically like a converted courtside VIP club. It wasn't a very big area. LeBron's back there, Steph's back there, KD's back there, and they have like, you know, not very big scrums for them. And then here comes DeMarcus Cousins, who's played 2 minutes in the entire All-Star game, followed by just a herd of media members chasing him. And for whatever reason, they had him set up all the way in the back of the room. So he's basically like pressed up against the back wall of this VIP club, surrounded by a solid semicircle of people. And he's kind of bemused. And then he gets kind of something whispered into his ear, and it's not clear what was whispered into his ear by Kings PR, whether they were telling him, hey, the rumors have picked up, or if they were telling him,
you've been traded. this is it for us. You've been traded.
But immediately he gets peppered with Pelicans-related and New Orleans-related questions. So it seems like the local media had a pretty good idea that the trade was either about to be finalized or done, even though the major reports hadn't broken yet.
Yeah.
And rather than play the coy, like step away from, you know, any talk about another team, I'm not going to be disrespectful to the Kings, like angles, he just starts like lavishing praise on New Orleans. Oh, I love it here. I used to come here when I was a kid. So he's
he kind of did that. He sort of seemed like a smartass as he was doing that. And that sort of indicates to me that whatever that guy whispered made it sound like this is probably going to happen. And he leaned into it.
Yeah. So it was sort of like a dog whistle to his new constituency. It's like, hey, guys, I love you, but you know, I'm going to like do this dance so that I'm not on camera confirming the trade, right? So he goes through this, he rolls his eyes about the trade rumors, he gets some real digs into the Kings in terms of how they managed the timing of this trade, which I thought was absolutely abominable and really indefensible by the Kings, and we can get into that later. He gets his digs in about how it's a big distraction, and then he's basically done, and he's shuttled out of that mix zone. That's all he has to do because he wasn't the MVP of the game, so forth, right?
Yeah.
So the entire media crowd then shifts scene from this mix zone to the press conference room where Anthony Davis has to go because he's the MVP, right? Now, Anthony Davis comes in and he's like in the best mood of his life. He's never been interesting in an interview basically ever in his career, as far as I can tell. He's cracking jokes with a foreign reporter about pronunciations. He's like doing the like superstar, like, hey, you know, like that kind of body language and carriage of himself.
Yeah.
And so that's weird in and of itself. He deflects all the DeMarcus Cousins questions, and then he just starts hanging out after the press conference with his family and supporters, holding his trophy, looking really happy. as Anthony Davis is still hanging out in this press conference room, the tweets with the confirmed trade start rolling through. So Anthony Davis is standing there, and the like 30, 40, 50 media members are all like, holy crap, like looking at their phones and typing away madly, you know, trying to confirm. And he's just standing right there.
So do you go back to him for reactions?
So within like 60 seconds, people start to like work up the courage to go towards him, right?
Yeah, because that's kind of like a dicey situation, because once NBA PR like cuts you off, you're supposed to leave those guys alone. But I mean, I feel like this is an emergency.
Yeah, well, you'll be proud of me because I went probably over the line, but people are like going after him, right? And they try to almost form like a second little scrum to get answers from him. He doesn't want any part of that. And then security starts to drag him out of the press conference room. And I was like, Anthony, Cousins got traded. What do you think? And he just like walks like basically right in front of me, like 3 feet. It doesn't even blink. Like doesn't even acknowledge. I'm like shouting this question at him. So then security starts dragging him down this hallway, right? And again, there's this just like train of reporters, not that many, maybe 15 if you include the cameramen who are following him, hoping to get like a fist pump reaction or like a cell phone call or just like something to kind of like confirm this so that you have a little bit of color for the stories. Uh-huh. And they drag him down into this private hall of the Smoothie King Center. And then security is like, if you have a red badge, and that's like the media people, you can't go back here. And so like everybody then like simultaneously hit this brick wall where they like couldn't chase Anthony Davis into the night anymore. So then, like, the media members who are now, like, documenting all of this, including myself, head back to the media room, and it's like, okay, like, let's see exactly what the trade terms are, and let's start to try to parse this. Like you're saying, I mean, everybody's just sitting there in this little shock bubble of, like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes clear that Buddy Hield, Langston Galloway, Tyreek Evans, a first-round pick and a second-round pick is what Vlade Divac was able to get for DeMarcus Cousins, an all-NBA center. And at that point, the conversation in the room kind of started to shift from like, there was like three stages. First, it was like, holy crap, the Kings are so dysfunctional. Why would they do this right in the middle of the NBA All-Star game when like they're just being a complete distraction and being unprofessional? That shifted into like laughter at the Kings trade package in terms of like, how did they really do it? And then that shifted into this like third level of disgust, which became not only did they do this at the wrong time, they just sold their franchise player for pennies on the dollar. Yeah, why doesn't the NBA protect these guys for themselves?
So I'm glad you eventually got to that disgust stage, because I really feel like that's where most of basketball fans have been for the last 24 hours. Like, I'm still in that stage. I'm still absolutely, like, I'm offended. The principle of a Buddy Hield DeMarcus Cousins blockbuster is just offensive to me. So
it was designed just for you to hate, because you're not a Buddy Hield guy at all. That goes back to before the draft, right?
I'm not. And of course the Kings are, okay? This is the team that sold itself on Nick Stauskas as the next Klay Thompson. This is the team that bought into Jimmer Fredette. Like, it's not surprising in the least that of 30 teams in the league, the one team that really believes that Buddy Hield is a future superstar is the Sacramento Kings. So perfectly on brand for Vivek and Vlade. There's a photo of Vlade watching Buddy Hield go off for 28 points in the rookie game on Friday night. So there's some people connecting the dots there that he saw that performance and he just couldn't say no. I think it's probably more that Vivek truly believes that Buddy Hield is the next superstar, because he loves those college studs, you know? He just can't get enough of them. So
I love the idea that Vlade's trying to make up for years of not scouting and not being around NBA quality talent by trying to pick up real, you know, subtle points on players' games from the Rising Stars
Rising Stars, yeah. I mean, look, big picture, this has the potential to really shake up the landscape. And I'm still in shock. Like, the way I reacted to it last night, this is kind of nerdy, but there are certain basketball moments where, like, I will always remember where I was when I found out about, like, the Harden trade, for instance. Like, I'll always remember that was a Saturday night checking the news from Woj and just kind of like my brain broke a little bit. And then LeBron, when he went to Miami, I was in a Boston hotel room. When he went back to Cleveland, I was in LA in my living room. And look, I will always remember like 11:45 on a Sunday night finding out about that Boogie deal, because it's just that insane.
I will always remember being blown off by Anthony Davis seeking comment on the Boogie deal, for sure. Hey, so, can I tell you my initial reaction there real quick when it happened? It went back to the stranded superstars thing that we were pushing for the whole first 2 months of the season, right? I mean, we identified these guys, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Paul George, who's still potentially in play here, and John Wall. And the one of those four who actually got saved over the course of this year was Wall, because he decided to play nice with Beal. Beal kind of rose to the occasion, and Otto Porter turned into this incredible find that really nobody saw coming.
Yeah.
But the easiest way to solve those stranded superstars was to team them up. I just never believed Sacramento would find pieces that they would actually desire from New Orleans.
Exactly. Like, nobody had ever put this together, because it was crazy to think that the Pelicans could ever pull off a Boogie deal. I mean, that's part of what made last night so wild, is that everyone, like, there had never been Pelicans Boogie rumors. The Pelicans were loading up to trade for Jahlil Okafor like 10 days ago. I do have a question from a listener, from Yuna Leska. Which trade is worse, this or the Harden trade?
This one, by far. I still defend the Harden trade more than most people, just because they were a team in a contending window.
Uh-huh.
Their move towards more flexible assets still maintained their contending window for years after that deal. They never fell out of that window, right? And there was different parts of that clearly didn't work. The Kevin Martin thing didn't work. But, you know, nabbing Steven Adams out of that, and you know, if you want to give all the credit for the Harden trade as a major reason for why Durant left, then I can understand it going through that lens. But I don't think that was really it. To me, this trade is significantly worse, because there's really no justification for it. Like, Harden trade happened, I was kind of pro Presti. I thought, hey, look, you know, three guys who all need the ball, that doesn't always make sense. But in Sacramento, I mean, I don't know if you've looked, you hate real plus minus, but they've now got Aaron Aflalo, Ben McLemore, and Buddy Hield, who are all three among the worst two guards in real plus minus this season. It's like they're collecting the absolute bottom of the barrel, worthless guards, and that's their game plan. Like, that's now their core.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's pretty indefensible. To answer the specific question, I still think the Harden trade is worse. Because there you were breaking up, a finals team, first of all. But also, like, they didn't have to make the deal. I understand why the Kings felt like they had to move Boogie. They just should have come to that realization 6 months ago or a year ago and operated accordingly. The fact that they just sort of ignored reality for like 2.5 years, and then in the span of about a week decided, okay, we absolutely have to trade him. Like, I had heard that they sort of started quietly asking around a little bit before All-Star weekend, but this all happened really, really quickly and in like textbook Kings fashion. So it's pretty, pretty indefensible. And, you know, like, there have been people who have come out and say, look, like, you can't really blame the Kings, because DeMarcus Cousins' reputation is so toxic that they just weren't going to get a good return for him. And his contract situation is complicated, and he'll be a free agent at a year and a half. So teams were not going to give up a whole lot for him. All of that is fair and true, but come on, all right? They traded him for a first-round pick that is not going to be in the top 10. Buddy Hield, who is like a borderline starter. I'm just not a fan of the like all lives matter, let's understand where the Kings are coming from takes. Like, this is just an awful deal. Let's at least admit that up front.
Yeah, I want to go back to when I visited their new arena back in the fall, and my big takeaway, we can go back and rewind the tape. My big takeaway was like, this locker room is never going to work. The players are not interacting with Cousins after a loss.
Exactly, yeah.
It was a toxic situation. They needed to admit that to themselves and move on. they did do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if they had these kinds of understandings, they needed to be cultivating deals the whole way along. They needed to be having sort of different pressure points, whether it's last summer or last year's trade deadline, where they had an idea in mind of what it would take to get it done. And rather than seriously entertain those offers, it just seems like they just kept putting it off, kept putting it off, kept putting it off. And then finally we're like, God, well, this is tough. You know, we're kind of sick of it. Well, why weren't you sick of it last year when you could have gotten even more for him? You know, why weren't you sick of it last summer?
Yeah.
And it was so obvious coming in as an outsider to realize that the situation was broken. I don't know if that they all had Stockholm syndrome for a while and they finally had a breakthrough mentally or what got them to that point. But it should have been a much longer time coming. And the other thing too, and I don't know if you've seen the comments from Sacramento's broadcaster, Grant Napier. You know, he's their play-by-play broadcaster, yeah. their TV broadcaster. He called the trade an absolute no-brainer. There's been a dark cloud over the franchise for years. The cloud is gone. The Kings were never going to win with Cousins. And then he said, the Kings became a team again. It's time to move into the future. It's time to start winning. And then he also added, most of Cousins' teammates the past 7 years hated playing with him.
Yeah.
That is a fact. So, and credit to Grant Napier, because he's been pretty hard on Cousins during game broadcasts. And actually, I was on the radio with him not too long ago, and he was just like setting me up to tee off on Cousins like time after time after time, which is very rare for team broadcasters in this day and age.
Yeah.
Again, if you realize that you have this problem, you need to proactively address it, right?
Like, yeah.
You need to figure out how you can maximize this kind of toxic asset, how you can put Cousins in a situation where he's almost being showcased, right?
For that was my only problem with what Grant Napier said, is that, first of all, I totally agree with you. I enjoy how honest he is on some of the Kings broadcasts, because you won't hear that around the league. But I totally understand if you're a Kings fan, and if you're close to that team and you've been able to sort of read between the lines and hear different off the record stuff, all of which is going to get leaked in the next like 96 hours. We're get ready for boogie leaks. I understand why you wouldn't want to have Boogie as part of the organization anymore. That part is a no-brainer. But it's just like, you can't get this return for him. Like, you can't tell me that the Suns would not have parted with this year's first round pick to trade Boogie. And that's a top five pick versus the New Orleans, which is probably going to be between 10 and 15. And it's just, that's not a great look.
I have a big problem with the timing too, because the way the timing comes off, intended or not, is that they were trying to humiliate Cousins. He's coming into this All-Star game. This is the highlight of his year. Obviously, you know, outside of the Olympics, this is the highlight of his regular season. You know, Kings not getting high TV ratings. You always make fun of me for watching the Kings games late night, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody else is watching. This is Boogie's showcase. He's excited to be around these guys. In the past, he's taken parts in stuff, events like the Skills Challenge, just for the visibility side of things, right?
Sure.
They just stomp on that, squash that with these trade talks right now. Did this trade have to be done today, or couldn't it have been done on Wednesday? Imagine you're a Kings fan. You're tuning in Sunday night to watch your favorite player or your franchise player, even if he's a polarizing guy, have his big moment in the sun, right? And I remember Blazers fans feeling like this all the time, so excited that guys like Damian Lillard or Brandon Roy or LaMarcus Aldridge finally got some national love, right? Not only do you really not get to watch him play in that game, you find out 2 hours later that he's no longer even on your team. And he, again, is put in a situation where he's got to sort of talk about how dysfunctional the organization is. I mean, it played off like the most off-brand, terrible version of the decision. This is like Vivek Ranadive's decision, where it was just like this trashy reality show where like cameras are just like, you know, jumping on Cousins as he comes out his front door to ask him how he feels about no longer being employed by his organization and going somewhere else, you know, rather than this like carefully cultivated LeBron James setup in Connecticut. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I know, I feel you. If I were a Kings fan, I would be pissed, because I'm like, I would be sitting there saying, look, if you guys are going to trade Cousins, that's fine. But you did not have to trade him Sunday night. You could have at least strung this out through Thursday afternoon and gotten a better offer. That's the reason. Like, I don't really care about them doing that. They're doing this during the All-Star game, but it just is kind of like, it's not like fiscally irresponsible, but there's like a professional negligence here to just do this overnight rather than wait and sort of field a more responsible option.
I'm going to hammer them a little bit harder even than you did, because I think, number one, they owe their fellow teams to not do this on All-Star night. This is the NBA showcase event that they overshadowed with this deal. I feel for Anthony Davis, you know, I mean, MVP of the All-Star game, not the greatest thing in the world. I'm sure he's much happier to have Cousins, but this should have been his night. It shouldn't have been this chaos where he's getting put in this situation.
Hold on. I got to push back on this. That was a terrible All-Star game. It was a rough All-Star Saturday night. And the Boogie news in the second half wound up saving everything, because it's so chaotic that it makes the NBA, once again, far more entertaining to talk about than anything else in sports. So, I kind of
hear what you're saying in terms of like the fan perspective, but I just don't think that the other teams in the league would look at it like that. And it's not as bad as like the Dolan embarrassment with Oakley, but I think that these organizations should have some level of professional responsibility, given that there's 30 of them.
Yeah.
That they have a certain respect for the institution of the schedule, right? And in this case, that's All-Star Weekend, where, yes, it was kind of a disappointing All-Star Weekend. Slam Dunk Contest did not go like people had hoped. TV ratings were good for the All-Star game, but it was very hard to stay awake at various points of that game, given the lack of defense. But not only is it bad towards the other teams, though, it's just such a slap in the face to Cousins. And after years of this tense relationship, is this really how you want to do it, embarrassing him? Is that the message you want to send to other players who you're going to potentially try to sign or court in free agency? That, hey, if such a great offer involving Buddy Hield comes along, we just can't pass it up. We have no problem throwing you under the bus immediately after the All-Star game. I mean, that just, to me, not that I would ever have wanted to play for the Kings previously, right, but after watching that play out, if you're another NBA player, you're thinking, man, I hope they don't draft me. I hope they don't trade for me. And I'm never going to give them a free agency meeting.
I think there are much bigger structural issues in Sacramento that sort of had already created that problem. So, yeah. But doesn't that
reinforce all of it? I mean, doesn't that show you, like, firsthand, like, they're so dysfunctional. Their decision-making is so poor. They're so out of touch and not connected with kind of what we would consider like the normal reality of what these guys are to expect.
Sure. And again,
bungle a situation like this.
If they waited 3 days, you can't convince me they couldn't have found a better offer. They probably, for all we know, they probably had better offers on the table last night, and just Vivek loves Buddy Hield, and that's what happened. I will say this. I sat down. Did I tell you that I sat down with Vlade earlier in All-Star Weekend?
So we can blame you for telling him to take this package?
No. Vlade really embraced, as someone pointed out on Twitter, Vlade really embraced our say yes to everything All-Star strategy. But I was hanging out with him. This is for a different story. And I talked to him for about 15 minutes. And he's like the nicest dude in the world. He's funny. He's engaging. And he was generous with his time. And I ended up coming away from it really liking him. And I think my number one takeaway is that he might just be too nice for this role and not sort of like cutthroat enough for some of these trade negotiations, because he just keeps getting his lunch handed to him on every single deal. Like, that was the other thing. I wrote about it last night. But if you go back, I don't even know if this is the worst Kings decision, because the Stauskas trade to clear cap space for Monte Ellis, Wes Matthews, and Rajon Rondo, the super team that never was, like, that is as logically indefensible as anything that happened Sunday night. And then there have been little moves over the years under Vivek that have just made no sense. Like, the firing Mike Malone was bad. Vivek, I think, took over after they had given away Isaiah Thomas, and they gave away Whiteside too. And like, just this team is such a mess, and it's almost, they're really in like a fire everyone situation.
Yeah, I mean, they're at the point where fans are probably wondering, like, would it have been better if the Maloofs just had just somehow hung on? Like, if the NBA could have just, like, strong-armed the Maloofs into, like, keeping the team in Sacramento, not moving it, and just staying as the owners, like, would that have been worse? I mean, By the way, Vlade is patently unqualified for his job. I mean, you were saying like he might not be cut out for it. Like, I think we can agree he's not.
Well, look, I really like him, and I feel bad saying fire everyone after I talk about how much I like Vlade Divac. But maybe just make
him. You can hire him in all sorts of different jobs, man. He'd be a fantastic ambassador for the NBA globally. You know, like you don't need to have him running one of the 30 teams. And here, this is the way that I always do it when I assess GMs. Right, I ask myself this question. If I'm going to call for him to be fired, what are the odds he's going to be hired again at some point in the future by another team? Is he ever going to get a second chance, right? Is Vlade ever, ever going to be a GM for any team besides the Sacramento Kings ever in the future?
Yeah, that's a pretty damning way to look at it. I don't know, man. First of all, I was planning on doing only 30 minutes on this trade and then moving on to the rest of All-Star. I think we need to extend that because we still need to talk about the Pelicans. My last Kings question for you, though, is like, at what point does Adam Silver step in here? I mean, like a couple years ago, I guess it was like last year around this time, there were rumors that the minority owners in Sacramento were unhappy with the way Vivek was running the team. At the same time, like Vivek actually doesn't own as much of the Kings as people might think. Like when I initially saw the way he was running them, I was like, well, I guess when you pay $1 billion, you can be as crazy as you want. But his percentage is much lower than that. And I'm just curious, like if Adam Silver saw fit to intervene to save the Sixers from Sam Hinkie, like I don't know how you stand by and allow the Kings to continue doing this.
I think the only answer is impeachment hearings. I think Vivek's got to go.
Yeah,
I think
maybe.
I think we need a coup. I don't know if there's going to be any other solution. What's kind of weird about Vivek is just how many people are just randomly taking joy and talking about how nuts he is behind his back. Usually there's like a respect for the office, you know, and like sometimes owners come off like caricatures, you know, the Clippers owner just being so goofy and, you know, he kind of gets caricatured and Mark Cuban, obviously, but just the scuttlebutt about Vivek in terms of like, just what a weirdo he is. And like his just strange beliefs and how he just sort of not being able to understand cause and effect where like, he has this evidence that these things aren't working, but he's not course correcting, even though he's supposed to be this like technology billionaire genius.
Yeah.
It doesn't really add up. I don't know. Maybe they do try to force him to sell. That'd be great.
My favorite Vivek note, we're recording this about like 3 o'clock on Monday afternoon. Before we came on here, there were two like back-to-back reports. The first was from Baxter Holmes saying that Vivek thinks that Buddy Hield is a future superstar and has a lot of Steph Curry in his game. And then the next one, like 2 minutes later, was from Tim Kawakami in the Bay Area saying that when Vivek was a minority owner in the Warriors, he preferred Monte Ellis to Steph Curry the entire time he was there, which is just a perp. Like, we need to start collecting Vivek facts because this is fucking history. Like, this is Ted Stepien in 2017. It's pretty unbelievable. And who knows where it can go next for the Kings. I don't mean to make light of their franchise kind of like going up in flames, but it's definitely something that like every NBA fan will remember because it's supposed to be impossible for teams to be this kind of reckless in the modern era, but the Kings are just sort of like blazing a new trail here.
Yeah, and let's not forget, they can definitely make this worse, like very soon,
exactly.
Draft night. Like, draft night's not that far away.
Yeah, like, look, draft night, they drafted Papa Giannis last June, who not a single team in the league had a first-round grade on, and also they did that because other draft prospects refused to work out in Sacramento. So, like, and that's the situation where you're like, all right, Silver has to step in because this is just not good for the health of the league, but it's we'll see where it goes. Like, we got to talk about the Pelicans though, because that
hold on 1 second though. I'm just picturing like on a neutral site like draft combine that the Kings are allowed to attend just so that they can see players because otherwise they're not going to be able to have access to them. That is a hilarious idea. You should write a column on that.
Yeah,
that is really funny.
We'll watch you work out in Switzerland. So, all right, let's talk about the Pelicans though, because that aspect of this, I have no idea what to expect. And I think we should all probably be a little bit measured in the way we look at this, because on the one hand, it's going to be wild. And from a basketball standpoint, like, I'm just really excited that we have like this new sort of experiment to watch every night. But if you ask me now, like, if I had to guess right now, I would say that this is not going to work.
Yeah, I have my doubts. So we can get into that. I think there's something important to say here, big picture, about the Pelicans.
Yes.
Remember, their ownership situation, incredibly shaky, incredibly dicey.
Yeah.
Their front office was absolutely desperate. Yes, Dell Demps completely fleeced Vlade on the trade terms here. No question about it. And getting Omri Caspi, that's like you steal his wallet out of one hand,
it's,
and then you,
quietly,
you know,
a big, like, yeah, that's kind of key for them.
Yeah, I mean, you're stealing his wallet with Cousins, and then you're also just taking his watch off his wrist with Omri Caspi, just to, like, as a final little dagger.
Yeah.
You look at their coaching situation, big question mark, and you look at the fan support. Fan support, I think, you know, it's basically terrible. You know, I met with some students who are trying to become journalists, you know, from Tulane University, and they're doing everything they can to, like, you know, cover the Pelicans and get people excited about it, and they're saying that there's just not that much of an audience, right?
Right.
So those are all bad things, and we know that Cousins in bad environments doesn't do great. So that's red flags to me. And I talked to one writer who covers the Pelicans on a full-time basis, and he told me, look, like, Cousins is going from the 30th most functional franchise to the 29th most functional franchise. Yeah. You know, and so how is that going to work? Is that a red flag?
Yeah, and so, that's kind of what worries me. Like, I started to write about how dysfunctional the Pelicans were last night in this column, and it just didn't totally fit, but there are a lot of, like, structural issues still there. They basically they got very, very lucky and bailed out by the Kings, and that might be enough, because, like, getting historically lucky has traditionally been one of the safest paths to, like, contending and stay and sort of finding NBA relevance in the NBA. So that might be enough, but the other thing is, there's only about a month and a half to try to make this work in New Orleans, and it's going to be kind of a tricky situation. And then if it doesn't work immediately, like, Boogie's not going to sign this June, he's probably not going to want to sign an extension. So then that sets up next year, where we have a year of Boogie rumors. And all the while, like, it's unclear, like, what the market is for him, and just how sort of toxic his reputation is around the league. I think if he were a free agent, like, almost every team in the league would take a chance. But we're gonna find out a lot about DeMarcus Cousins over the next, like, year and a half here.
For sure. I mean, all his excuses are gone. It's time for him to show that he can behave. I mean, his goal should be zero technical fouls the rest of the season, no suspensions. And their goal as a team should be the playoffs. I mean, if they're not in the playoffs, I think that this trade, you know, looks worse than it does today. In terms of the fit,
yeah,
I can't think of another team in the league right now who would try to build a roster around two bigs as their two best players, their two highest salary players, especially when both those guys are scorers first, and maybe, you know, have shit, you know, not bad, but sometimes shaky, you know, defensive impact numbers.
Uh-huh.
And then, because Davis is ostensibly going to be the four, and he's not really a stretch out to the three-point line shooter, you know, is this a situation where they're going to be boxing in their offense a little bit? Are they going to be able to get the most out of both those guys? Are they going to have to stagger the minutes, so maybe they always have one on the court, and that's how they kind of get around that? Or do they just turn Boogie loose as a playmaker and, like, yeah, set him up almost as, like, high-low passer, you know, feeding Anthony Davis on lobs and kind of go that direction?
That's kind of what I was envisioning, because of Boogie's shooting and how well he is off the dribble, or how well he plays off the dribble. Like, they could just go high-low with those guys and just dominate people. And they're going to – I mean, like, so now that the disclaimers about, like, questions are out of the way, I can't wait to see this team play like the Warriors. And if a first round series with Golden State would be fascinating, just to see, like, because you're not gonna keep them off the boards. They could both go for 30 and 20.
Yeah, no, they're must see TV the rest of the way, just to see how they put it together. And for Alvin Gentry, like, it's better to have talent than not have talent.
Yeah. But
this is a tricky situation. I mean, he's used to, you know, Steve Nash in Phoenix. He's used to Steph Curry, you know, guard dominated offenses in Golden State. I mean, that's sort of always been his thing, right? And that's kind of how modern offense works. I mean, unless you're going to kind of turn Cousins into a point center and, or as like your secondary ball handler outside of Drew Holiday, do they have enough pieces on the perimeter to kind of get the most out of both these guys, or are they both going to sort of be out there, how, you know, performing like we've kind of thought Davis has been performing over these last couple of years, which is unbelievable individual effort, but not really part of a cohesive team unit where you feel like you're getting the best quality contributions from him. I'm worried now that we're going to have two players in that same situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're 2.5 games back of the Nuggets. They play the Nuggets 3 times in the final 3 weeks of the season. I mean, it's going to be kind of a wild race down the stretch. And all, like, the other thing I'll say is that when the rumors started last night, I was like, all right, great. So we've got 3 days of sort of like BS Boogie to Pelicans rumors, and then nothing will happen. Something happened, and this, I am thrilled that something happened, and now we sort of get to see, like, nobody really knows what this is going to look like, and we get to kind of watch it play out in real time, which is great for the league overall. And I think it's another reminder that the, like, designated player exception, which would, like, theoretically keep superstars, like, locked to their original teams, is bad for the league, because the whole, like, all of basketball got more interesting last night.
Yeah, I mean, this is almost a test case where it backfired, right? Because it forced a team to trade him, because they didn't want to have to potentially lock into that $200 million, which, by the way, less than 6 weeks ago, Cousins was taking questions from the Sacramento media about how he was going to be there for the next 5 years. And he was asking them jokingly, like, hey, do you guys want me here? And they're all like, not really. And it was that awkward video.
Totally.
Dude, that was mid-January.
I know. You know? Yeah, it
it's
really
ridiculous.
Does. It feels like that was October.
They went from committing to him forever to ditching him in the middle of the All-Star game.
No, not only that, like, a week ago, Vlade was like, look, we're not trading Boogie. That's the end of it. And then, the same time, Boogie gave an interview with ESPN where he was like, I want my jersey in the rafters in Sacramento. So, like,
Andrew, that's what I'm saying. I really think this is a toxic execution of this trade.
And you know what?
I think that their reputation was terrible already. I really can't overstate my opinion that this makes it a lot worse, significantly worse.
The other thing I liked about those interviews is that I don't think anyone heard those quotes and were like, oh, wow, well, I guess that's the end of it. They really do like each other. Everyone's like, all right, whatever, we'll see in 2 weeks.
Vlade's alternative facts.
So a couple more sort of threads with this deal. Like, how does it shape the trade deadline here? I mean, personally, as a Wizards fan, I'm like, all right, let's start like picking that Kings roster bare. Let's get Ben McLemore. Let's get Darren Collison. They'll probably waive Tyreek Evans, making him like a pretty attractive buyout candidate for a contender. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got like, if the Kings, the one part of the Kings deal that isn't totally crazy is looking at DeMarcus Cousins and saying, we're not going to pay you $210 million to come here and make everyone miserable for the next 4 or 5 years. So I'm curious now, like, the Pacers have the exact same decision with Paul George in June. And like, it wouldn't be crazy for them to turn around, for them to see how bad the Boogie return got and say, look, let's be proactive and make a deal sooner rather than later. And the same goes for the Bulls.
Yeah, and let me just, on your point with the Kings in terms of making the right decision on the $200 million extension,
yeah,
100%. But let's rewind 6 weeks and say, don't put out the report, or don't confirm this rumor that you're thinking about giving him a 5-year extension, because that kills your leverage, that kills your future negotiating power. I mean, there's no reason they ever should have been tied to that kind of a commitment publicly.
Yeah.
And they basically just made it seem like it was a de facto thing. And it's just inexcusably bad management. You don't negotiate in public like that, ceding leverage, tipping your hand. It was just dumb. In terms of Paul George, I mean, I think that this Cousins trade is proof the stranded superstars thing is real. You know,
yeah.
I mean, these guys, it's in the best, the best interest of both the teams and the players when they get into those contract situations to fully investigate all possibilities. The Pacers, I think, have a much healthier relationship with Paul George. This is a complete side note. I was disgusted by Paul George's shot selection in the All-Star game. I don't know if you saw that, but it's just terrible. But okay, back on track.
We're going to have to do another podcast where you really break down the X's and O's of the All-Star game, because it never fails to amaze me how seriously you take it, and I love it. But we'll do that on Tuesday.
The first play of the game, DeMar throws a bad pass for a turnover that goes for a layup, and I was just talking so much crap to the Raptors beat writers. It was great. Oh, glad he started. That was really important. But back on track with Paul George. I think he's the next name up on this block. I mean, really, who else? You could put Jimmy into the mix. But I think what I've heard from Chicago is they still are good with him. Mm-hmm. I actually think that Paul George will remain in Indiana because they're playing for something through the deadline.
Yeah.
But he is going to be the name this summer for sure.
That's kind of the feeling that I get. I feel like they will probably hold on to him this week, and then in June, everything will be on the table. Because especially if they sort of sputter down the stretch and go down in five games in the first round, like, then it's really time for everyone to take a look around. The reason you wouldn't make a deal now is because they're going to have a lot of attractive options in June if they decide to hold on to him. Unlike the Kings, who, like, the longer they waited, the more the rest of the league was kind of side-eyeing DeMarcus Cousins and saying, all right, well, whatever. And especially because now, like, Boogie is going to be a free agent and will be available to teams like the Lakers, who can get him without having to give up any of their young guys.
My last thing on this entire trade situation is that, and I've said this before, I could see a little bounce back from Sacramento's other players. I'm not saying it's going to be like this amazing push, but guys, you know, everybody basically in their rotation, I think, will be putting up significantly better numbers down the stretch. I think they're going to play much more cohesive team basketball. And I think they're going to actually kind of maybe even adopt this, like, you know, underdog hometown favorite mindset. It could also go really south and they just play Papayannis a ton of minutes and everybody just revolts and it's just a disaster. But
the
Papayannis
era starts now.
Yeah. But they have the potential with Jaeger as a coach, and he kind of like pulled that together in Memphis through all those injuries, to take on a different identity of this kind of like scrappy upstart team. And
yeah,
they've got some guys who could do that.
Well, it's interesting.
If that happens,
though,
great.
If finish outside the top 10, Chicago gets their pick, correct?
Yeah, they have every reason to.
So they have to be careful. But I totally agree with you. I think there's going to be, like, the Kings will be weirdly fun now, whereas every Boogie game this season has been kind of like an exercise in misery. I will only say that we were supposed to come on today and do like a trade deadline preview, and I was kind of dreading it because it's like, you know, throw out a bunch of names, most of whom won't get moved, and it's just sort of like, all right, there we go. But this, like, everything else is gravy after the Boogie trade, and I feel like we might still see some big moves over the next few days, but this is crazy enough to make the deadline a success. This and Serge Ibaka, and then I just need the Wizards to make a couple moves to load up the bench for the playoff run, and we're straight. So I consider it a success. Do you want to talk about All-Star for a few minutes?
Oh, for sure, definitely. How about the dunk contest?
So, all right. Can I ask you something? Do you blame me? Because when I saw you on Thursday night, you were like, nah, man, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to jinx it. And I was like, come on. You can at least just tell me what's going on. Do you blame me for forcing you to talk about your story?
Well, for people who haven't read it, he's referring to the Aaron Gordon drone dunk behind the scenes story, and I really had my hopes high. You know, I'm pretty cynical, but you could see it in my face. You were kidding me about it. Like, I was all in on the potential.
Well, and
of Aaron Gordon using a drone to dunk in the dunk contest. It was like my dream story.
That I was not a fan of the inclusion of the drone, but what you got to do was basically go there on Friday night, watch his warm-ups, talk to him before everything went down, and just sort of like see how this whole process evolves. And that's like one of the coolest things you could possibly do at All-Star Weekend. I would love to go behind the scenes for any dunk contest participant. So I was like pretty jealous of you. I was pulling for you. And then it just like could not have been more disastrous. So what was it like to watch it all unfold?
Yeah, so the actual practice was on Thursday, so that made it even harder because I had to like sit on this secret for even longer. But when they first pitched the idea of like, hey, do you want to go behind the scenes? Like I said, yes, like before they even got the words out.
And they're
like, then they're mentioning drones, which, you know, I'm like kind of a nerd. I thought about buying a drone for Christmas. Like that was like right in my wheelhouse. They're like, why'd you want to buy a drone? I was like, well, I just want pictures of myself hiking. They're like, oh yeah, cool.
Which, by the way, I think represents like a sizable portion of the drone market, just like hikers looking to check out nature.
Yeah, exactly. So they had me right in the right demo, like the right Venn diagram of like people who are interested in drones, interested in the dunk contest, and like willing to like, you know, hear all the facts about Intel and communicate them to the public. So they handpicked me perfectly. But I talked to his mother, who was fascinating. Aaron Gordon is a fascinating kid. He drives a Tesla. He's all in on technology. He apparently makes pillow forts in his living room so he can watch projector videos with his older brother, even though they're both adult men. His mom was giving him Stephen Hawking books to read when he was a kid. He's super into mental awareness training. He's invested in this app that helps athletes with their mental focus. So he's not what you expect when you see him, like, you know, he's just like this kind of like buff jock who you think is like, you know, just like California cool type of kid. And there's a lot of like intellect behind that.
Yeah.
And that's why he came up with the drone dunk. He was like, how can I take it up a notch from last year when he used the hoverboard? How can I get the fans excited and sort of, you know, pulled into the contest? And his whole phrase was he wants tens on tens, right? He wanted to maximize the technical nature of the dunk. And like he told me, like he thought Blake Griffin's Kia dunk sucked because he didn't jump over the entire car and because he played it safe.
Yeah.
So he's like, I'm just going to go all out with crazy technical dunks and I'm going to have the showmanship factor, right? That's why he said tens on tens for both technical and showmanship. So what happened was the drone, to my great surprise, and I know I told you this, I thought the drone was going to just screw up somehow. Like I was convinced that, like, you know, your cell phone battery dies at the worst possible moment. Like if you're interviewing somebody with a tape recorder dies, you lose the interview. Like those kinds of little technical difficulties always happen. And I was just sure the drone was going to like fall out of the air and land on some mascot, like on the sideline, and it was going to be a disaster, right?
I was sitting in the crowd of like about 100 feet from you, and I was stressed out on your behalf. So once the drone went airborne, I was like, oh my god, please don't like fuck up on national television.
Drop the ball. So they custom made this drone with a claw to hold the basketball. They gave me all the tech specs on it. They refused to tell me how expensive it was, and I asked their rep, is it more or less expensive than a car? And they said, quote, depends on the car, right? They sent out a team of 6 people to drive the thing and like manage it, the drone squad. They had their own jackets that said drone squad.
Yeah.
They sent out multiple PR people, multiple, you know, marketing people. Like this was like a really big deal to them because they had just come off the Super Bowl where they had used drones as part of the Lady Gaga performance. And they're really trying to push hard into this whole drone thing as like an avenue for new revenue, right?
Okay.
So they're all in on this.
You think it's more expensive than a Kia?
Yeah, I think I do. I would bet that drone, with the custom nature of it, how much development it required, you know, it's called a hexacopter. It had 6 wings.
Yeah.
Like there was a lot to that thing.
They're
not commercially available.
Right. Let's say more expensive than a Kia, less expensive than a Tesla.
Yes. That sounds like a good range. So, but I'm still expecting it to fail.
Right.
Somehow it works perfectly.
The drone was flawless. The drone delivered.
And not only that, but the smoke effect and the Star Wars music, it had the intended effect of what Aaron Gordon envisioned. All mm-hmm. the crowd was up on their feet. They had their cameras out. They were videotaping it. There was oohs and ahs. I went back and looked at the video I took from the arena. Everybody was into it. And it was the human element that failed. It was the robot succeeded, the human failed. And I felt so bad for Aaron Gordon because he's just all in on slam dunks. I mean, he studies this stuff. He only wanted to do dunks that, you know, hadn't been done before. He organized his routine, his four dunks that he had planned to do in order of difficulty so that he could kind of like build towards a crescendo for the final round.
Yeah.
He actually had a second drone dunk that was secret that he didn't even break out during the practice because he didn't want anyone like me to just like stupidly go and say what it was going to be on Twitter and ruin the surprise. So he had all this secrecy factor and it just went for naught because he couldn't finish that first dunk, and I felt terrible for him.
Yeah, I did not really feel that bad for Aaron Gordon. I felt terrible for Ben Golliver as I was sitting there, and you handled it well, all right? You were able to laugh about it and laugh about how poorly it went. And, you know, it's all in the game. It will be really funny to look back on this in future All-Star situations.
Well, I got a few interesting follow-ups.
Okay.
Number one, the non-NBA writers, like just like the pure writers who are just randomly there at the All-Star, they were telling me that this was the better version of the story for me to write.
Yes.
Because like the failure is more interesting and there's like more emotional tension than if it had gone perfectly, right?
Right.
So I really took that lesson to heart because, you know, I'll be honest, I was rooting for it to work the whole way because I had seen how much it meant to him, right? And everybody was nervous on his behalf. His mom was nervous. This Intel marketing lady who'd never been to a dunk contest before and was like asking me how the scoring system worked because she had never seen one.
Uh-huh.
She was nervous. She was nervous for him, right?
Yeah.
And when I talked to him after the dunk contest, I mean, this is like 2 hours after the dunk contest on the phone. I mean, he sounded distraught. Like, he still sounded really upset that it hadn't gone right. And,
well, look,
you know, the easy thing to do is to laugh it off and say, oh, it's only the dunk contest. But this guy, this is the highlight of his whole year,
and
you know? And
he
came so close last year.
It's not only the dunk contest. Like, people need to realize how stressful a spectacle the dunk contest would be to, like, participate in. Because, you know, especially now where, like, fans are more judgmental and just like shitty than they have been ever in history, to go out there and have like all of Twitter scrutinizing you and to do this whole thing, like there's a lot of pressure and everything else has been done. So it's tough. I don't envy anyone who is entering the dunk contest. I will say that, like, I also, like, after every dunk contest, there's all this hand wringing and about like, how do we fix it? And like, the bottom line is that you just have to kind of accept that, like, once every 4 years, the dunk contest is going to be amazing, and then almost every other time, it's going to be like it was Saturday night.
Yeah, and that was kind of my takeaway, too, is I thought that all the negativity about the dunk contest and Saturday night in general was warranted. I mean, yeah, it was a big letdown.
Yeah, but it's all in the game.
But there was a really clear alternate reality where if he nails that dunk and he has this amazing second drone dunk, now we're in a situation where, like, this is one of the most memorable props ever used in the dunk contest, and people are, like, you know, comparing it to the cupcake and some other situations. So, like, the line between successful night, Aaron Gordon claims his first dunk contest title, oh, this was so cool. Yes, it was kind of corny, but, oh, it was this really memorable moment. The line between that and what we had is a matter of inches, you know?
Yeah.
And to tough. Me, that's what was so... And that's really why I kind of felt bad for him. But that was my night. I stayed up until 4 o'clock to write the piece. If anyone's still listening to this, please like go read it, give it a click. I thought there was some pretty interesting behind the scenes details about how it works and the scope of the dunk contest too, in terms of how much preparation's involved. I think people will find interesting.
Yeah. And look, I do feel bad for Aaron Gordon. I do feel bad for Ben Golliver. I'm pretty happy for Glenn Robinson III.
Oh, no doubt. You know, let's not bury the lead.
Our guy, he did his thing. He did well. I do wonder, like, do you think he doesn't have... I wonder about his relationship with his dad, because it would have been perfect for him to dunk over his dad in that contest, and it just never happened. I kept waiting for Big Dog to come out and have Little Dog dunk over him, but we didn't quite get that.
It did seem like he kind of called in his surrogate big brother, Paul George.
Yeah, right? Like, Paul George is cool, but man, dunk over your father. Come on, how many times in life are you going to have that opportunity? And Derek Jones was good, too. I do think that, like, next year we have to have, like, a group meeting so that we come up with a way so that every contestant isn't doing the exact same dunk, because I feel like every player dunked over, like, two or three people on Saturday night, but it is what it is. Yeah, man. So, can I tell you the highlight of my weekend?
Yeah, I'm hoping it involves some parties, because you just kept texting me from these ridiculous parties, and I was like, does this guy ever write? I mean, where are you? Like,
I was lucky enough to get into a couple cool parties on Friday and Saturday night. But certainly, and we can talk about those in a second, but certainly the highlight for me was say yes to everything. I agreed to go to this like promotional thing for Gatorade on Friday and didn't really know what to expect. Apparently Joel Embiid was going to be there, and it was just sort of like one of those junkets, and like All-Star Weekend is full of these things. And what it turned out to be was we showed up and they're like, do you have any workout clothes? And I'm like, I just came from like all the way across the city. I was at the Basketball Without Borders scouting thing. No, I don't. And so they were like, oh, all right, we're going to find you some workout clothes. Then we go out and we get to play basketball for a full hour with Drew Hanlon, who is a trainer who works with Bradley Beal and Kelly Oubre. So at the end, I like went up to him and was like, listen, man, we don't really know each other that well, but I just want to really thank you for the work that you've done with Kelly Oubre over the last 12 months.
For saving my life.
Yeah, exactly. For just like really putting my life on a better course. But yeah, so, and they put us through drills, and Embiid was there the entire time and like actively like playing with us. Not too active, Sixers fans. Don't worry. He was like still pretty careful, but he was blocking almost every shot we had, and he like kind of just goofing off with us. And it turned out to be a great little event that I'll be laughing about that for like years to come, because I had no business being on a basketball court with Joel Embiid.
Well, I mean, you say that now. We'll see. You know, I mean, a couple years from now,
look,
you know, a couple more injuries. I mean, you might be able to, you know.
So I'll also add that I am pretty bad at basketball and don't play very often anymore. But part of the fun was like I forgot how much I actually love playing, and I did have one moment where I was backing Embiid down, and we were supposed to fade away. And again, Embiid had been blocking like pretty much every single shot. And so I back him down, then hit him with the fade away, but it's a pump fake, and I go up and under for the layup. And he started laughing. The whole gym like kind of burst out laughing as I got a bucket on Joel Embiid, all right? Like, class was in session.
You dream-shaked Joel Embiid?
a little bit. And really, like, the pump fake is an integral part of any, like, awkward white guy's basketball game. And so I'm glad that I got to bring it out in crunch time against Embiid.
Let me rephrase. You Kevin McHale'd Joel Embiid.
Exactly. I have Paul McKeskey.
Dude, you are the man.
Joel Embiid. It was fantastic. So that's my All-Star highlight, and then other than that,
well, that means I have to retire all of my statistical comparisons about the Sixers' defensive rating with Embiid on and off the court. Now, I mean, if he's giving up layups to you in the paint, like that's a bad sign.
I have never been more invested in the success of Joel Embiid, because look, he's just like, I saw him a couple times throughout the weekend, and he's just such a great personality that like it would be so good for the sport for him to be like a full-on legend. And number two, like, I need him to be a Hall of Famer so I can say that I scored on a Hall of Famer. So let's get that meniscus healed. Let's get back to the court, and let's go dominate for the next 15 years, Joel Embiid.
I'm with it.
But yeah, other than that, I spent most of my weekend running around doing various interviews and talked to a lot of great people. I love All-Star, man, because it's such a ridiculous spectacle, but you just get like the whole league converges, and you see like just there are so many different pockets of basketball that I like, and the various personalities across the sport, and it's pretty fun.
Hey, I just want to know about the Jordan party, man. You're really beating around the bush here. Like, you sent me pictures of a cake that had like Jordan sneakers that were like more elaborate than most wedding cakes.
All right,
like, when are we going to get to that part of the story?
So look, I kind of feel like I'm not cool enough to go to the Jordan party. A friend of a friend hooked me up and we got in, and it was just like, it was a wild, it was very exclusive. There were like probably 80% of the All-Star game was there. And on my phone, I have a list of the most random people who were at the Jordan party. One of my favorite moments of the night was Allen Iverson having like an emotional embrace with Ben Gordon in the VIP section. And then there was Gerald Wallace, there was Nick Stauskas, Myers Leonard, Malcolm Brogdon, Drew Gooden, Greg Monroe, and Jim Harbaugh. So that's my list of most random attendees. There was also like Michael Jordan, Charles Oakley, DeAndre Jordan, Paul George, like pretty much everybody, Kyrie. So it was fun to just sit there and be like a dork people watching. Jordan had the birthday cake, which was like an elaborate sort of like, he had a Jordan 11s on his cake. It was cool. Did I send you, he also had a cigar bar, like an open bar, which like, I feel like that was his real birthday cake. It's just an endless supply of cigars for the night.
Dude, I cannot believe you let me talk about drones for 20 minutes before we got to Michael Jordan's private cigar bar. What is wrong with you, man?
Oh,
come on.
Man. It was
we
solid.
Can't be burying the good stuff here.
Yeah, I love that. Embiid might bring Stauskas everywhere. It really made me happy and even more invested in Sixers' success that those two are like buddies on the road together. The other thing, the next night, I got to go to a Beats by Dre event that went pretty late. And the most fascinating part of it was that LeBron showed up, and then KD and DeAndre showed up, and they just never interacted. And LeBron and Russ, though, were on one side of the room and like rapping to every word of every song for about 2 hours straight. And just watching them bonded by Warriors hate was really pretty special.
Well, I'm jealous now officially.
I know. And I feel bad about, because I am the biggest, I'm the most awkward person in the universe. But it was fun to get into a couple of those places. And yeah, man. And then I left. So I'm jealous that basically you got to be there as like the Boogie trade unfolded in real time in the locker room. And I left Sunday afternoon because I was like, nothing's going to happen at the All-Star game. Nothing's going to happen on Sunday night. And then, I don't know, the whole league changed there.
Yeah, every year it's the how quickly will the All-Star game post-game talk turn into trade rumors? And this year set a record that will never be broken.
I know. So like, I was talking to our editor about like recapping All-Star, and then we were like, you know what? Like, I don't think anybody's going to care that like Kyrie Irving is secretly a flat earther. Like, I think that story is done now.
Thank God, because that the number of people who are not willing to call out Kyrie Irving over that, LeBron James, Giannis, the silent cosigns are part of the problem, guys.
Yeah.
You got to hold science first. And it did bother me that Kyrie Irving was trying to pretend that he was just being provocative. Okay. There's a difference between being provocative and ignorant, as we well know on this podcast.
Yeah.
That's actually probably the slogan of our podcast, right? We can't tell the difference between provocative and ignorant.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good place to end. Look, we will be back later in the week. Who knows what's going to happen after the trade deadline, but it was a successful weekend in New Orleans. And yeah, we'll be back to sort of pick up the pieces after the next few days. Ben, so you're in NOLA until when?
A couple more days. I'll be back in LA for the trade deadline. Just as a quick final prediction, I'm expecting action. I think we're going to get a couple moves. I don't know if they're going to be big moves, but I think we're going to get some that maybe alter the playoff chase a little bit in terms of like the contenders loading up. I just have a sneaky suspicion. That doesn't mean anything, I'm always wrong, but I got a little feeling.
I'm excited, man. All right. Well, yo, enjoy New Orleans and enjoy. Go take like 2 or 3 days off, and I will talk to you on Thursday, all right?
All right, bro.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.